Mike McCarthy has been fired, so who should be the next head coach for Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers? Plus, how the Chargers turned things around in Pittsburgh on Sunday night, why you should still be bullish on Baker Mayfield and Houston in New England, rounding into form just in time for the stretch run. We've got that and much more from Week 13 on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. This was Week 13. We have our first head coach firing to talk about, Andy. I think that's where we're starting the show.
Our first of the holiday season. I mean, we had a good time with that Hugh Jackson firing a few weeks ago, but
oh, right.
This
Hugh
one's
Jackson
a big one,
like
don't you think?
This one's a real big one. This one doesn't have quite the comedic effect that the Hugh Jackson one had. I can't believe I forgot about Hugh Jackson. I'm very sorry about that.
Well, it's a marquee franchise. It's a mark of an era changing, and it's a superstar quarterback getting a new head coach. Those three things do not happen very often. I think we can skip the analysis of whether we've talked McCarthy so much and the Packers offense so much, not just this year, but in past years. I think the general consensus and how you and I feel is that we understand the move. It was time. Are you with me on that?
I am with you on that, and certainly if anyone read the MMQB content of the past week, Andy had a really good extra point column last Monday. Kalen Kaler had her big takeout feature on what was wrong with the Packers, and now here we are. I mean, I think we all saw this coming, and certainly we saw it coming once they had lost the Cardinals on Sunday afternoon.
So then the question becomes, who coaches this team next? And I understand why the Packers would fire McCarthy to get an early jump on it. I know Tony Dungy at halftime of the Sunday night game, and we'll talk Steelers-Chargers here a little later, he didn't love that they didn't let McCarthy finish out the season, and I'm sure that's how a lot of coaches feel. The reality of it, though, is McCarthy also gets a jump on the coaching process for him.
Yes.
And a big deal with coaches is finding your staff. Gary, I get multiple texts from coaches this time of year each week saying, what are you hearing out there? What jobs will be open? Because everybody in the NFL is starting to look at, where will I coach next year? How can I get promoted? What are the opportunities? This is a great – if McCarthy's fate was inevitable, and I think anything short of the kind of run that you kept predicting for him, which was another wrong prediction, by the way, if anything short of that had happened, McCarthy'd be looking for a staff anyway, so he gets a jump on it too.
Why am I getting jabbed here?
Because you know why you're getting jabbed? I'll tell you why. I thought about this all day long. I thought I know how I'm going to open the show, and this is before McCarthy got fired. I thought I'm going to open the show by telling Gary yet once again, this is a great example of why we're not looking at this strength of schedule thing in the NFL, because it was upsets on top of upsets today.
It was.
And comeback wins. So I was all prepared, and I was going to use Cardinals – Packers as the jumping off point to attack you that way, but we let off with McCarthy, and so I don't even remember what I just did to attack you now, but I wanted to come out fighting because you're doing the strength of schedule thing, and I'm begging you to stop, begging you.
Packers are not mathematically eliminated. Maybe they'll win the Super Bowl anyway, Andy, with Joe Philbin here. You raise a really good point on Mike McCarthy. Look, Jenny Vrentis had done a piece, I think 2 weeks ago now, looking at who the top head coaching candidates were, sort of surveyed people from around the league. And the two names that came up again and again and again and again, which might surprise some people, Josh McDaniels and Mike McCarthy. Mike McCarthy is I don't want to say definitely going to get a job. I think he's very likely going to get a job. And early reports are that that Cleveland is very interested. So letting him go now lets him get a head start on that. And let's face it, the Packers, you know, there are no moral victories for the Green Bay Packers. They're not going to, you know, sit back and say, oh, we finished 8-7-1. Now we have some momentum going into the next season. It was time to reset.
Yeah. Do you think the Cleveland job, and they didn't win today, but let's say they finish with 6 or 7 wins on this. Let's say they go up 2 or 3 over 500 under Greg Williams. And let's say Baker Mayfield keeps looking as good as I think he's looked. Even again, I know he had the 3 interceptions today, but we're going to talk further about him. Is it possible that they want to do kind of what the Bucs did with Dirk Cutter a few years ago and say, we want to keep the Mayfield-Freddie Kitchens marriage intact. We're going to ride with Greg Williams.
I think that's a logical way to do it. the way John Dorsey's been talking, and look, John Dorsey threw everyone a curveball last draft season when everyone said, well, he's going to take one of the big guys with big arms, and not that Baker Mayfield doesn't have a big arm, but Baker Mayfield is not his style of guy. You know, a lot of whispers coming out of Cleveland are that John Dorsey wants a veteran coach, a leader of men, proven type of guy to take over that franchise. And it's tough to say I would be on board with Greg Williams getting a head coaching job. That seems to be somewhat uninspired, but I do like the Mayfield-Freddie Kitchens pairing. And I don't know. Do you bring in McCarthy and have him be a CEO type, or
I say I don't think McCarthy would do that. McCarthy is an offensive hands. McCarthy is calling the plays with Aaron Rodgers back there. He took back the play calling from his longtime assistant Tom Clements. He's not going to just be a CEO type with a Baker Mayfield young type of QB.
What if he's changed his mind after the last couple of years? What if he doesn't want to call plays anymore?
Well, we could see. I mean, typically play callers like to remain play callers, but not all of them. I know Bruce Arians once told me he would quit coaching if he couldn't keep calling the plays. And Arians is another guy in contention for this job in Cleveland. Who do you think? So I'm more interested anyway. Let's also remember the guy that had the Cleveland job, Hugh Jackson. Remember the year he got that job? Everybody thought he's the number one candidate, and they've been talking about him like they were McCarthy now, where it's, well, where's Hugh going to be? He's got his choice. I heard he even cleaned out his desk before his exit interview in Cincinnati because he was so sure that he'd have options as a head coach, and he wound up only having one option. It was the Browns' job, the worst job out there, and it didn't work out. So I know McCarthy's a hot name now, but these things have a way of changing once the job interview process actually initiates and once we see which teams have playoff success. Who do you think is the right type of coach for Green Bay? That's what really fascinates me, though.
Well, everyone's saying offensive. You know, they're going to go offensive mind, which is understandable. I think if you're going to have someone dealing with Aaron Rodgers, you want it to be someone who can sort of be on that same footing with him. As far as the, I'll say in shorthand, just the power dynamic goes. I think you want that to be your head coach dealing with your future Hall of Fame quarterback.
It's a young guy's game right now. We're hearing about names like Zach Taylor, Lincoln Riley, these young quarterback whisperer type of coaches. That's not the guy you bring in to coach Aaron Rodgers. You're not bringing in someone younger than him. DeFilippo, I don't think you bring him into coach Aaron Rodgers needs a very specific time. I mean, Josh McDaniels, maybe, who's worked with Tom Brady, so he's used to the
McDaniels makes sense, yeah.
McDaniels would take that job, I think, too.
Could you bring Bruce Arians out of retirement if he's going to come back?
Would that be the best fit?
It's a
Arians,
veteran.
I don't think Arians would do very well with Rodgers playing off schedule.
Yeah.
Although I don't know. Maybe he had Roethlisberger early on in Pittsburgh.
That's kind of isn't that kind of what you want to do with your next head coach? You're looking at Rodgers. He's you know, he turned 35 on Sunday. He is presumably going to have some sort of diminishing physical traits at some point in the next couple of years. I feel like the next head coach's biggest goal should be to get Aaron Rodgers to consistently play on schedule, and then the question becomes, well, what's your system going to be? They also, they also have the problem. They've had so much change over. We've talked about this. They had so much change over at receiver this year that really kept Rodgers from being able to play effectively off schedule. It just doesn't work when you have a bunch of young receivers who don't know what you're doing when you start improvising. But
do you go defense or special teams coaches and do the CEO approach and then hope to find not hope to find you would hire the head coach knowing who his offensive coordinator would be? Is it possible we like a John Harbaugh? Not that John Harbaugh might actually be out there himself, but I was going to say a John Harbaugh type. Would you consider doing that?
I think it's tough. I think it's tough to have an assistant coach, trying to wrangle Aaron Rodgers. We saw what happened. Mike McCarthy was the head coach. They they were not meshing here. There was tension. There was always tension, and when they were winning, it was healthy tension. And now that they're 4-7-1, it was very unhealthy tension.
You know, one thing I like about Arian's scheme, the more I'm thinking about this, because he'll do empty sets a lot, which kind of forces the ball out of the hand of the QB. I know Carson Palmer felt he had to get, he had a bad offensive line in Arizona, but he felt under Arians that there's a lot of pressure on the quarterback to get the ball out when you go to empty. And I don't know if Palmer always loved that, but Palmer had some excellent years under Bruce Arians. The other thing that Arians does, it's a deep intermediate passing game. It's not a quick strike passing game. And part of the issue with Rodgers is he'll hold the ball on those quick strikes, which is really unusual. Maybe if you do that deep intermediate, you build, if Rodgers is going to play the way he plays, and let's assume he is, then maybe finding a deeper passing game where there's theoretically more time built into the plays, which leaves more time for Rodgers to scratch that itch to continue plays. All of it just extends out for him. Maybe that would be a viable option. I'm liking this Arians thing the more I'm thinking about it.
It's going to be really fascinating. I mean, those are...
Yep.
I think I like the McDaniels call best. But, yeah, Arians, do you...
I like McDaniels more than Arians for this scenario, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll see. I think it would be a... I mean, look, I don't know enough about Lincoln Riley. I mean, I know what he does down in Oklahoma. I think there's an unknown when you're taking a guy out of the college ranks where, frankly, the coach-player dynamic is far, far different.
Lincoln Riley would make...
Yeah.
Right, he'd make more sense for Cleveland, not just because of the Baker Mayfield thing, but in theory, the young quarterback, Rodgers, would have to adjust a lot more to a Lincoln Riley than another QB would. And I don't know Aaron Rodgers, but from what I've heard on his person, I don't think someone younger than him is going to be the right solution at all.
Yep.
I can't fathom that.
Yeah, it's a big, big moment for the Packers here. Well, let's go on. Let's talk more of what happened on Sunday. We're going to go on to not the Cardinals-Packers game, but we're going to talk Chargers beat the Steelers on Sunday night. This one was this is a weird game. The Chargers just scored in really bizarre ways. I'll just say that. I mean, they haven't been on primetime very much the last couple years. Phillip Rivers was joking about that after the game during the interview with Michelle Tafoya. But they played a primetime game and they got a victory on the road at a very difficult place to play. You feel good about that. They blocked much better in the second half and they started getting to Roethlisberger in the second half. It was a much better second half than first half.
On both sides of the ball. The team that won at the line of scrimmage won the game. Pittsburgh's offensive line humiliated Los Angeles's defensive line in the first half. And in the second half, there was a little bit more of an activity with the Chargers' pass rush. And the Steelers lost some rhythm. And then I thought the biggest factor in the game overall, yeah, they had some fluky kind of touchdowns, but they were moving the ball up and down the field. They kept getting Keenan Allen matched against Pittsburgh's zone defenders inside. And that meant those linebackers. And L.J. Fort played tonight instead of John Bostic a lot of the time because Fort, who's actually their dime linebacker, it's interesting. The Steelers have Vince Williams and John Bostic and nickel, and then for dime, both of those guys usually come off the field, and it's L.J. Fort in there with Morgan Burnett, who I don't believe was available for this game tonight. So maybe that was also part of the equation there. But L.J. Fort had a great game, but that doesn't mean you're stopping Keenan Allen. It's not all him. They got him on Bostic. They got him on Vince Williams. The Steelers got out-schemed by the Chargers in the passing game, quite frankly, and that was the difference.
Yeah. No, I'll agree with that. It was a bunch of weird touchdowns, though. You had the false start touchdown. You had the Joe Hayden interception that Sean Davis separated him from that turned into the Keenan Allen touchdown, and you had the long punt return there.
Yeah. That false start touchdown got over. It was a false start, but I don't think that's what caused the touchdown. It's a great route design. Wheel route, your guy with leverage.
Yes.
Travis Benjamin, who's speedy, get him on Mike Hilton and trail technique.
Yep.
Rivers, a great throw. You know, I understand why people would be upset, But if I'm Pittsburgh, if I'm Keith Butler, their D coordinator, Mike Tomlin, I'm still breaking down that play with my guys tomorrow and saying, you get a minus, you get a minus, and you get a minus because we gave up the touchdown. I don't think it was a – I don't think they got the short end of a stick, and that's what caused the score.
That is correct. That on the back end, certainly, on the end of that play. I do wonder how, if any, that affected the pass rush. I'd have to watch the replay 40 more times, which I haven't done yet. But I don't know.
I thought there were times Pittsburgh was offside. That was kind of blurry on some of those snaps. Yeah, it was in that game.
It really was a mess, and I'm sure you enjoyed the end because you got a triple play of special team snaps there.
And that, by the way, is why I don't watch special teams because – and this is an issue on the return game. I did see the Desmond King punt return, though, because when you're fast-forwarding, you can tell when the play goes on for 70-something yards. You go, well, maybe I'll watch this one. Yep. But so often, great special teams plays have penalties on them. I'll watch a game-winning field goal. I'm not a robot. I'm not completely devoid of emotion. But, man, yeah, three times through with the flags, I thought, geez, all this does is validate the way I watch football.
There you go. Artie Burns took that second one right in the face, which can't feel all that good. I guess that's a true penalty. Nice to see the Chargers win a game in this style for once, because that seems like it's the kind of game that they have lost over the years. And AFC is interesting here. They probably can't catch the Chiefs. They got to go to KC.
They play them. They play them still. Yep.
I know. They got to go out there. We'll talk about the Chiefs and what's going on there in a little bit. First though, let's go to the Texans winning handily over the Browns, and let's start with Baker Mayfield. I know you've been really excited by Baker Mayfield. As we talked the other day, he is your greatest love or something like that. I can't remember what we said on last week's deep dive show, but he had a really shaky first half in this one.
He did, and after the game, you probably were CC'd on the emails where I was emailing everybody saying, let me write the Baker Mayfield's amazing piece anyway. Let me write, I don't care that they lost. But I guess that would make us look bad, wouldn't it? So we're going to save that till middle of the week and look ahead rather than looking back on Mayfield's three interceptions.
I refer to him as having done a Nathan Peterman impression in my Sunday column, my Sunday afternoon column. So
here's what I don't mind about the pick, because they were rookie plays, and yep, some of them were a lot of zone coverage. The Texans, one thing they did in this game, they did 8-man zone coverage, which is a tactic that I've always liked against young QBs because it gives them more to sort out in coverage. It changes their throwing lanes. They're not used to looking at 8-man coverages. The Texans often did it out of a 5-man rush look. So they show blitz and then play 8 in coverage. That's a lot of directions for a young quarterback's mind to go. And what Mayfield did too often the first half was forget to take his mind to the backside of his reads. And he just made some bad throws. He continued to be decisive and aggressive throwing the ball between the numbers, though, Gary. And he played very well in the second half. And the game was a lot better played by Cleveland, especially in that second half, than the final score would indicate. Where I get worried about a young QB is when they start breaking themselves down in the pocket, when mm-hmm. they're staying on bad reads too long and not getting through their progressions cleanly. I don't mind a quarterback throwing a horrible interception here or there because I view that as the cost of doing business and part of the learning experience. I'd rather see that. In fact, if I'm a fan and I'm trying to win the game, I don't know if I want to see it this way, but as an evaluator of quarterbacks and projecting a guy's long-term potential, I'd rather see a bad interception here or there rather than a choppy, fragmented drop-back passer. And I don't think I've seen anything choppy or fragmented from Mayfield in several weeks now. He looks very confident and decisive in a good way out there.
Let's talk Texans here for a second. They have won 9 straight, and we said for a couple of weeks, you know, they're winning really close games. Are they a true AFC contender? This is two pretty easily, handily won games. They handled the Titans on Monday night, and they obviously they won this one with relative ease today. What do we make of the Texans at this point? Right now, they're the 3 seed. They're tied with the Patriots, but they have lost the tiebreakers because of the season opening loss in New England. But how do they size up with the top teams here?
That's a Deshaun Watson question, And we've talked Watson and his pocket presence a couple times on the show. I'd imagine our listeners know where that is. He was excellent today, and he was appropriate with using his legs to extend plays. He wasn't using them as a crutch, as we talk about, that analogy that you stole from me a week ago. He was staying right on top of the designs of the play. Here's two parts of the Texans we have not talked about that I think are starting to come to light. Their back end on defense is getting better. Aaron Colvin was back healthy today. They're bringing him along slowly, but he'll probably be a number two or three. Tyrann Mathieu, despite blowing that coverage on the Jonnu Smith touchdown on Monday night 2 weeks ago, he's having a nice season. He's looking like Tyrann Mathieu that we saw early in the Arizona years. And then Justin Reed, Eric Reed's brother, third-round rookie, he's playing with better range and physicality each week. So it's an ascending secondary, and if you add in Zach Cunningham, who was rangy and good as an athletic linebacker in today's game being the Browns game, he had the great coverage plays, a pick six. I think it's a better secondary and a back end of the defense than we saw early in the season. The other thing, Gary, their offensive line's not the liability it was early in the year. And it's actually starting to control people in the running game.
Yeah, that's what was kind of wild to me the last couple of weeks here is, I mean, that offensive line was such a liability early in the season. And I don't want to say it's good now, but it's serviceable now.
I'd say it's serviceable and playing very well. Their ground game, they've had success with all kinds of different runs. And one thing I like about Lamar Miller and Alfred Blue, those guys are very professional runners. They operate the way the play is designed to be operated. They get the yards that are blocked. Sometimes they get a little bit more than that. They don't leave a lot of yards on the field. I don't think either guy is a dynamic creator, but they're very good within the context of a play design. And if their offensive line's going well, they're going to capitalize on that, and they're going to be effective. And this team has put up enormous rushing numbers over the last several weeks. They had 188 against the Dolphins a few weeks ago, 140 in the win against Washington, or 139. They had 281 on Monday. And then what were they against the Browns? They had to have been, I would imagine they were over 150. Well, 187 watching that game. 39 runs, 187 yards, 157 of it came from Blue and Miller, their running backs.
Yeah. No, nice work by this Texans team that is really becoming well-rounded here. Let's go Vikings at Patriots here. Patriots won this one 24-10, and they won it rather handily. This was, you know, I've been waiting for the Vikings to sort of put it together on both sides of the ball for a week, and it seems like they're not quite there yet. Patriots sort of picked on the Vikings linebackers here. They moved the ball with some short stuff, and they piled up 471 yards of offense here, got their lead, and then they just sat back and they tackled everything in front of them in the second half, and the Vikings just never really felt like they were on the verge of getting back into this game.
Yeah, 32 dropbacks for Tom Brady, 39 rushing attempts. So they sat on the lead on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
And New England can do that, can't they? New England's a one team where you look at the box score of the game and you're not always quite sure how the game was played because they have so many hidden yardage in their special teams and the way they manage things. But this one, the box score seems to kind of match up to the way the game's being described.
Yeah, it was kind of wild. Look, Patriots had the lead. Vikings tied this game late in the third quarter, and that was really the only time that the Patriots felt like they were moving with any sort of, I don't know, urgency, I guess. They had a four-play, 75-yard drive in less than 2 minutes to retake the lead, and they just kind of, you know, they kind of cruised after that.
Are we worried about the Vikings at all?
You'd like to see them put it all together, and I worry about teams that don't look good playing from behind, because chances are at some point in January you're going to fall behind. You're going to have to rally, and I don't think they're incapable of doing it. They have a quarterback who can do it. They have, obviously, the talent in the receiving core. But Adam Thielen was pretty quiet today. The Patriots, they take away one of your guys, and that's the guy they took away. But, yeah, this was not an encouraging performance from this offense or this defense. But I think especially this offense.
Yeah, 6-5-1 Minnesota on the outside looking in. But the good news for you, Gary, is the Redskins are ahead of them. So there's a guaranteed playoff opening there still in the NFC as the Redskins are headed for 6-10.
There you go. I'll send you my strength of schedule. Let's talk Jets-Titans. Titans staying in the playoff hunt. Coming off that Monday night game, and then they fell behind 16-0 in this one late in the first half. It felt like this was sort of we were watching the sad death of the Tennessee Titans 2018 season. Instead, yep. They rally and win this one. Kind of in ugly fashion, though, but they got it done, Andy.
Doesn't Mike Vrabel on the sideline always look like he's annoyed to the point of almost fed up? Like he just can't believe all the idiots around him. Every single time, I'm not saying that's how he feels. I'm saying that's the way he holds his face on the sideline. He always looks like he's near the end of his rope. Like he just can't believe this. Like, what's going on?
It's that 90% of the time, and then 10% of the time, it's just kind of blank, which might be a sign of... I can't believe what I just saw. I'm processing what is going on here, but yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I know that look. I think he's doing a nice job with that team. Let's look at what they have on. We talk about all the time. They don't have, it's funny. We say all the time, they don't have a lot of speed on offense. They don't take the top off the defense. And then I've told you how every once in a while, the Taiwan Taylor people get to you on Twitter and say, hey, you're forgetting about Taiwan Taylor. And then you have to remind them that, well, Taiwan Taylor really doesn't play very much. And he's not part of the rotation. The difference in this game today was they got Taylor deep over the top against mm-hmm. the Jets secondary a few times on designer first down shot plays. And it was Darrell Roberts at free safety for the Jets now with Marcus May on injured reserve. And Roberts is a backup corner by trade. He's not used to playing in middle field or center field. And the Titans went after that, and they did it on a first down where Marcus Mariota's at his best as a passer. Mariota, the more I watch him, Gary, the more I think he needs help from the system around him. I don't think he has a good enough arm to make throws without his legs being part of the equation. So if he's on the move at an awkward angle, I don't think the arm's good enough. If he's got a muddy pocket, I don't think it's good enough. If his mechanics are a little bit glitched, you're going to see a ball that's really inaccurate. What he needs is a clean platform to throw from, which means he needs clean looks, run defense looks, in other words, and something like play action that naturally expands the pocket. The more they throw on first down with Mariota, the better off they'll be, and they did that really well in this game today.
Yeah, and just talking about the job that Vrabel and that staff have done in the first year here, I thought with all the injuries they had this summer, and not only guys who went down for the year, John Cyprian, everyone was banged up all summer. They really didn't get guys on the practice field. Rashawn Evans, the rookie linebacker, Harold Landry was battling injuries. It seemed like the entire defense was battling injuries up front. It seemed like it was going to be a team that, they just kind of started slow and then maybe had some encouraging signs, finished the season 6-10, 7-9, go get them in 2019. And they got wins. They figured out how to win early on, and now it seems like it's still a little bit fragmented, but it can get there. You feel like it can get there at some point, maybe if not in December 2018, when we come back in September 2019.
Yep. The other thing Derrick Henry is going to be an interesting guy in this offseason, whether he stays with him or what's his long-term future in the NFL. An epiphany I had today, because he had a nice run on a sweep that set up a touchdown, a critical touchdown in the flow of the game. This was a comeback performance by the Titans. That's getting lost in our conversation here. But Henry, a few years ago, Alex Van Pelt, who was for the longest time Aaron Rodgers' QB coach, rewrote about him on the Kalen Kaler's excellent article in the Packers this past week and the relationship that Rodgers had with Van Pelt. Van Pelt's now in Cincinnati. But for 2012 and 2013, Van Pelt was Green Bay's running backs coach. And one thing he noticed about Eddie Lacy that year is Lacy's better when you get the ball in his hands early because it establishes some downhill momentum. It shifts the mindset as a runner. You're not worried about taking the handoff. You're mm-hmm. now just reading the defense. I think Derrick Henry is Eddie Lacy. I think you've got to get him. So, and what they did in Green Bay when they found that out about Lacy, they started pitching him the ball all the time. They didn't do handoffs. They pitched everything. They did some pistol stuff, and they tried to give him the ball as soon as possible earlier in the run. I think you need to do that with Henry. He is, I don't love him as a runner, but once he gets some downhill momentum going, I think I do love him. I think he's a freight train at times. So more sweeps, more pitches, designs that get the ball to Derrick Henry early in the down.
I can go with that. All right.
What's
that?
You're signing off on that.
I'm signing off, yeah. Stamp of approval. I didn't give you a concerned groan right there.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate that. Makes
my sounds
good.
My sounds were positive. Let's go. Mm-hmm. Let's go out west. The Chiefs beat the Raiders, which I didn't think surprised anyone. 40-33. That Chiefs defense maybe it's still a little bit shaky, but obviously the story in this one. And look, at the MMQB, we will be doing quite a bit on Kareem Hunt over the next couple weeks here. We're not going to deep dive the mess he put himself in with his actions, but obviously they are without him now. He was their star running back. He is gone. They don't have to reinvent what they do with Kareem Hunt out, but obviously Spencer Ware is a talent downgrade for this Chiefs team.
Yeah, I don't think he's as big a downgrade as people would guess. I agree with you that they don't have to reinvent themselves with Hunt out of the lineup. And some of the stuff they were doing with Hunt, that was stuff they'd actually invented for Ware the previous year. Ware had a nice season receiving in 2016. Then he got hurt in 2017. That's really why Hunt was on the field as a rookie. Ware coming into last year was regarded as one of the more up-and-coming, all-around, versatile running back. So I think they'll be fine here. Their other guy is Damian Williams, who is an excellent receiver. I know Gase loved him in Miami and all the stuff he brought to their passing game. I think they'll be fine in Kansas City. I don't think they'll miss Kareem Hunt at all, to be honest with you.
Hmm. I will say there were a couple plays today where I kind of thought I was looking for it specifically, but I kind of thought, you know, Kareem Hunt might break through that tackle, break through that arm tackle there. Not that Spencer Ware is a runner that lacks power in a significant way, but there were a couple plays where I said, you know, I think Kareem Hunt would have made a little bit more out of that right there. As far as this actual game went, it was, again, Chiefs, you wish they were a little bit better defensively, but they put up 40 points, four more touchdown passes for Patrick Mahomes, and they win in a game where... Yeah, they led throughout. Let's go to probably not quite the upset of the week here, but a pretty big upset. The Giants beat the Bears at home. Chase Daniel was not good in this one. I don't know, you know, in the alternate universe where Mitchell Trubisky is healthy, I don't know what you get out of this game. I will say one thing, and I don't want anyone to misconstrue this because people will jump down my throat. The Bears pass rush outplayed the Giants offensive line, but I thought the Giants offensive line held their own a lot better than I would have thought they would, especially in the first half where, you know, Giants got a pick six early and, they moved the ball. They had a chance to actually generate some offense, and then they ended up taking the lead in the third quarter and hanging on for the upset win here.
So this doesn't reshape your view of the Chicago Bears at all?
It's a little bit disappointing.
They got a
big
test next week.
I thought the Bears were going to go in there with that defensive line against that offensive line, and I thought it was just going to be an absolute bloodbath. I thought the Giants would not be able to function offensively. And look, a lot of what they did, Odell Beckham threw another touchdown pass. They had to get creative in what they did, but this was not the Bears defense dominating this game like I thought they might.
One thing about that Giants offensive line with Jamon Brown in there now at right guard, and then Spencer Pulley at center and Will Hernandez at left guard, that's a lot of meat along the interior. It's a big, physically large interior offensive line, and that's a big deal when you play the Bears. It's not just Akeem Hicks, although he's a monster and he plays a great strength. It's also contending with Eddie Goldman and owning the trenches, not letting the Bears dictate in the trenches. And physical size and strength, maybe that's the solution. That's one thing that you have to keep in mind when facing the Bears, that might be an answer for them.
Bears actually got a little bit of a pass rush going. The Giants got a little bit of a pass rush going in this one on the Bears. I don't know if that's a concern for Chicago going forward. It was a weird game. It was weird weather. Like I said, Chase Daniel played quite poorly in this one. And it was a weird game. Akeem Hicks scored a touchdown, had a 1 yard touchdown run. You had the pick six early on for Alec Ogletree. Ogletree had another athletic interception later, and then the play that forced overtime was Tariq Cohen on a little halfback option throw coming through on a jet sweep, ended up having to fit in kind of a nice little throw there especially for a 5'6" guy. So interesting game, wild game, but I think this is one where the Bears, even with Chase Daniel, kind of probably should have said, you know, that this is a game we should win somewhat handily.
B.J. Hill for the Giants, their third-round rookie, had 3 of their 5 sacks. 5 sacks is stop the presses with the New York Giants this year, because their pass rush has been utterly anemic. But one guy that does show up, and it's been a little bit more in run defense, is B.J. Hill, who I know James Betcher, their D coordinator, loves. He said he's the most ready-made rookie he's ever seen. He's a great technician. He's going to continue to get better. I think he's got a bit of a ceiling on him. I don't think he can become a Cam Hayward or something like that. But he's going to be one of those players who makes every defensive line he's ever on subtly good, and people who are watching are going to say, why is nobody talking about B.J. Hill? He's great. He's a big difference maker. He's going to be a solid B-plus player for a long time in the NFL. And this was a little bit, I don't know, coming out party, would you say, for B.J. Hill?
It was good. Like I said, it was such a weird game. They fumbled the ball 6 times in this game. They only lost one of them ultimately. It was a lot of smoke and mirror stuff. They tried to get Tariq Cohen coming out of the backfield, going downfield on a lot of stuff. Cohen ended up having 12 catches in this game, along with his touchdown pass. It was an unusual game. I don't know how much you could read into this, except to say that you're disappointed if you're the Bears, and obviously you're excited for the Giants because you scrapped this game out and you looked a little bit more like you probably wanted to look when the season started. Carolina at Tampa Bay. These Panthers, Andy, this is heartbreaking.
For me, when I wrote the article that I'm falling in love with them.
Oh my goodness! It's a 4-game losing streak. Like I said, this started with the Thursday night loss in Pittsburgh, and you know that's Thursday night. Throw it out. It's not real football. Just heartbreaking losses the last 2 weeks. Very even games. This one, they go to Tampa, and Cam just has a rough day. He throws 4 interceptions. How many times this year have the Bucks dominated the turnover battle? The Bucks did end up losing a fumble on the goal line at one point because that's what the Bucks do. But they win the turnover battle 4-1, and that's not enough for the Panthers.
Bucks were without their top 3 corners in this game. Brent Grimes, and then Carlton Davis and MJ Stewart, their slot guy, the rookie. He's been out a few weeks now. Those guys were all inactive. It was a backup secondary. One of the backup DBs, Andrew Adams, a former Giant who was not good with the Giants, but he's actually been pretty good as a dime linebacker for the Bucks this year. He's been decent. He had 3 of the interceptions in this game. This is a tough loss for Carolina. Division opponent, a team you know, a team you've beaten, and you're playing their backups. And I know the Bucks, they've expanded their scheme a little bit since adding Mark Duffner, D coordinator, taking out Mike Smith. They're a little bit more matchup-oriented in their coverages, less pure zone stuff. But Carolina, they should know what they're getting when they come into this game. They should be, this is a bad loss. This is one where they should have known what they're getting and be able to exploit it.
It is. They had 3 possessions in the fourth quarter to try and tie this game, and came up empty on all of them. 2 interceptions, a turnover on downs, and they had a late thing that also did not result in points, but that was somewhat understandable. But let's go to another disappointing day for a playoff contender. This is the Colts go to Jacksonville. Cody Kessler gets his first career win as an NFL starter. He's 1-8 now, and he did it in style. 6-0 Jaguars, and if the Jaguars can shut opponents out every week, I think they might have someone with Kessler here.
What in the hell happened to the Colts? That offense was humming.
It's look, really good performance.
I didn't see a lot of this game. You're going to have to help. Did you see I didn't see a lot of this one, to be honest with you. I'm trying to understand how they got 0 points.
Jaguars were good. Jaguars were very good, especially in the back end and in the secondary. Luck threw a couple of Luck, I don't want to say he was terrible in this game. Luck was disappointing in this game. His interception was very just a very questionable decision. And yeah, they just couldn't get anything going. A lot of it was the Jaguars' defense, and then it was just kind of one of those days for the Colts here.
I guess Jalen Ramsey, the psych move on Andrew Luck, pretending to help him up and then pulling away. Which I've always wondered why more guys don't do that. And if you'd asked me who's the likeliest to do it, I guess I probably would have said Jalen Ramsey. But why would you pick poor Andrew Luck? He's the nicest guy in the NFL after the snap. He's the last guy who deserves something like that.
If you're going to do it, I guess it's not really a heel turn with Jalen Ramsey. I guess that's always been his MO a little bit, but I don't know. It was funny.
Luck
funny
probably
in the
complimented him. Nice creativity there, buddy. I mean, Luck probably found it funny.
It was the most sophomoric thing possible besides, I don't know, like throwing a football off of Andrew Luck's groin, which would draw a penalty, so it's good that he didn't do that. But this Jaguars offense, though, I mean, I don't know. They won the game, and I guess you could say, well, you know, Bortles was in there. They might have turned it over and given up short fields, and the Colts win. So a win's a win. But Cody Kessler, he's a backup. He belongs to the NFL. He is a backup. He is not a very exciting backup. This is going to be a tough team to watch down the stretch here if you enjoy
offense.
Yes. And let's go with that. Let's go to the lightning-ish round. Let's start Ravens. Ravens 3-0 with Lamar Jackson under center now. And by the way, Lamar Jackson was actually in concussion protocol for a drive in this game. So you saw Robert Griffin, or I guess just Rob Griffin, the third, or whatever the correct moniker is at this point. He came in and actually led a field goal drive. It was a lot of runs, but he got him there. So this is a solid win for the Ravens, and this is kind of there's something to be said for look they don't have a passing game, but they are forcing teams to play a lot of assignment football. Jackson is obviously very dangerous with the ball in his hands, and it's kind of complementing a dominant defense.
And I think it's going to stick. I think Joe Flacco will remain on the bench because they have too many dimensions in their running game now, and they lose some of the passing game, but I think I think in this case they'll take the trade-off. They've gained more in the running game than they've lost in the passing game by having Jackson in there for Flacco.
Yeah, I can't remember which TV commentator said it, but someone said as if it were a foregone conclusion that Flacco is back in the lineup next week, and I do not think that's the case. I think Lamar Jackson will have to be in concussion protocol again for Flacco to get back on the field. But Falcons, by the way, this is four straight games without scoring 20 points. This is not going well.
They might, and this is for a different show, but we might have to revisit the Steve Sarkisian situation at offense, just because this team's window is now. And
they're so
going to have to – this is a 30-point offense that's not always playing like that. A different discussion for a different day, but these are big games for Sarkisian down the stretch.
Yeah, offensive line was overmatched against the Ravens today. Let's go Rams-Lions. Look, the final was 30-16. This game was closer. I thought the Lions were very good defensively in this one. They put a lot of heat on Jared Goff, which is not something you would have expected from this Lions pass rush. They actually played very well. They defended that screen game very well a couple of times. Basically, they just, you know, they didn't have enough offense to keep up in the end. But this was a close game.
One thing I'll be eager to see on the film, because you can see this easily on TV, but you almost need to be looking for it to notice it. And on film, when you can pause and rewind, you have the time to look for it. is what they call kind of a bullseye tactic. What the Lions like to do is jam receivers as they come off the line of scrimmage, but they jam them with their edge players, which is part of the reason the Lions don't have much of a pass rush. Their edge guys, think Devin Kennard, who plays on the edge. Mm-hmm. He's not an edge bender or a pass rusher, but what he can do is put his hands on a tight end or on a running back who's releasing late. In fact, I had one coach tell me Kennard is so good at that that he is the reason they played the certain defensive fronts that they played, just because they wanted to get Kennard up on the line of scrimmage to be able to jam guys. I'm bringing this up because the Rams put their receivers in those tight splits, and I wonder if the Lions had a plan for disrupting the release of those tight splits with guys like Devin Kennard, and if they did it and when they did it. And maybe it's one of those you need to do it once or twice, and that's all it takes to get inside the head of the Rams or the receivers. I don't know if they did that or not. Again, you have to go look for it. I'll look for it when I put on the film. But conceptually, this will be a good piece of film to watch, because the Lions are not a talented defense, and from all appearances, this was a hard game for the Rams.
Just two things real quick from the Lions' perspective, because I'm beginning to worry that the Lions are not going to make their Super Bowl run this year. Their offensive line has been horrible the last 2 weeks. Granted, it was the Bears who are very good up front, and it was Aaron Donald dominated yet another game today. But they have a huge investment in that front five, and for them to be subpar is, if that's the way it's going to be, that's going to set them back a couple years. Sometimes you need a year or two to get some chemistry going up front, but it is not good what is going on there. And one more thing, I keep on referring that to them as my Lions, and I think I'm going to have to stop that, because I got an email from a dude the other day who was like, "You thought the Lions and the Cardinals were going to be the Super Bowl matchup?" And I kind of had to say, no, that was I was just joking. I know they're in the same conference, etc.
Did you say that on our show? I'm trying to remember when you said
it's a carryover from the gambling show on Fridays. But then I started talking about it on this show all the time, because I was sure it was going to be a Lions-Cardinals Super Bowl in Atlanta this year.
And this guy took time out of what I imagine is his very busy schedule to send you an email about it.
It doesn't help that I'm on like a, what am I, like 5-14 run in the gambling show anyway. So it's a whole thing. I deserve to be mocked right now, but maybe not for the thing that I wasn't actually serious about. Buffalo at Miami. This was Josh Allen's. Josh Allen's just fun to watch. He ended up having 135 rushing yards in this game on 9 rushing attempts. You had a final play in this game where, Allen did the Patrick Mahomes thing where he turns and twists 14 times. Everyone's sort of running around chasing him. And then all of a sudden, all the defensive backs had run to one side of the end zone, and Charles Clay was alone on the other side of the end zone, and the ball just came out of Allen's hand weird after scrambling for, 14 seconds or whatever. And Clay made a lunging attempt at it, got his hands under it, but didn't hang on, and they both said after the game how they were devastated by that play, and both of them took the blame because they're good guys. But yep. In the end, this ends up a 21-17 victory for the Miami Dolphins, who are also still hanging around the playoff hunt here.
Absolutely. Allen, by the way, his longest run of the game was 28 yards. 9 attempts, 135 yards, nothing over 30. So this was a sustained rushing performance by Josh Allen. I can guarantee you, I don't even have to see the film to know what happened in this one. As they sent routes at Kiko Alonso, Raekwon McMillan, those linebackers, those guys are not going to process 2 or 3 pieces of information at once. They process the routes, they react to the routes, and the middle of the field opens up and Josh Allen runs. I would almost bet a year's salary, which I think I owe you for our last bet, that's what's going to happen once you put on the film and see how these runs came to be.
Denver at Cincinnati, Broncos go in there and beat the Jeff Driscoll-led Bengals here. But the headlines from this one, look, A.J. Green went down with a non-contact injury. Looked like it was his toe again. But probably the really big headliner, well, it is the really big headliner, Chris Harris broke his leg in this one. So Chris Harris is going to missed time. The Broncos hope they will have him back if they make the playoffs. That seems like something of a long shot at this point, but they won't have him for the rest of the regular season, and that's obviously a big deal. He's a superstar cornerback.
Yeah, huge, huge loss, because we've talked about how inconsistent Bradley Roby has been. Now Roby becomes the number one, but also Harris, with his ability to go into the slot or play out wide, that gave him a lot of flexibility, not just for how they used Harris himself, who, as you said, is a true number one, but also how they would use Roby, and at times when he's struggling, how they would hide him, or Tremaine Brock, their other nickel corner for that matter. So it's a thin secondary now. The pass rush becomes that much more important. I'm not overly optimistic. Harris is a key piece for them. I'm not overly optimistic.
And last game of the week, Seattle Seahawks win the rivalry game over the 49ers, 43-16. They won this in their usual fashion. They won the turnover battle significantly. They end up getting three takeaways to zero giveaways. They actually got outgained in this game, 452 to 331. But they were in control. This one never really felt like it was in doubt for the Seahawks, who continued to win the way they win. They had their three backs combined for 144 yards. Rushing yards in this one, so nice work.
Nice work, and Seattle had only, it looks like they had about 50 snaps in the game, totaling up some of the stats here. 40 points on 50 snaps, that's pretty efficient, and that takes some dominant play on both sides of the ball.
Especially
your defense. You've got to have some field position help to have only 50 snaps and put up that many points, because they didn't have a ton of yards either. It's not like, Russell Wilson had 185 passing. They ran for 168, but their longest run was 23 yards. It's not like they had these home run plays.
Well, they also, 128 penalty yards for the 49ers in this one, too. So,
oh, that helps. That'll help.
It does. It does. But this was a nice, comfortable win for the Seahawks. And look, all the talk in the preseason about who they had lost and how they weren't going to be the same Seahawks and all that, there's still enough guys there between Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, to keep the ship righted in Seattle. And obviously they are right there in the playoff hunt in the NFC. I believe they would be, I'll give you the quick playoff picture, even though I'm sure everyone who listens to the show has gotten that somewhere else. They are, depending what happens Monday night, Washington can come tie them for the wild card spot. But Seattle at 7-5, they would be in if the postseason started today. It would be very unfair for the postseason to start today, because that means the Redskins and Eagles played one less game than everyone else. But
yes,
that's where we're at. Thing of the week, Andy. What do you have?
Keenan Allen on stack releases and switch releases. That's another area where he's dominant. And the more I watch really good offenses around the NFL, the more you see how important those stack releases are. Those, when you release receivers off the line and the defense can't tell which receiver is the most outside guy and which one's inside, and you keep that blurry for as long as possible, that's high-level offense, and that takes a lot of nuance from wide receivers. I was really impressed with Allen in it this game. Other teams, the Steelers actually did some nice things with it as well. The Patriots are always great there. The Rams are probably the best in the league there. That's a big deal moving into this final quarter of the season, because it's still a passing league, even if the weather's turning bad. Which teams can make cornerbacks and safeties have blurry reads as far as their receivers coming off the line of scrimmage?
I have four things, Andy, and they're all really quick. Number one, I was about to cough when I said thing of the week, so I threw it to you really quick, not expecting you have something, and you had something.
Okay.
Good.
Yep.
So thank you for that. Number two, mm-hmm. There was so much profanity during the 4 o'clock games. They should have been rated PG-13. You had Belichick screaming at Adam Thielen, dropping F-bombs. And then you had Kyle Shanahan just run up to an official at one point, and just, I couldn't tell exactly what the message was, but I could tell the F word was said in there. Can't say it on the show.
Right.
We'll lose our clean rating. And by the way, Shanahan got an unsportsmanlike flag for that one. Number three, my real thing, they have to streamline replay. Because if you have streamlined replay, all you have to do is get rid of that Microsoft Surface product placement that they want so badly. And I think if every football fan promises to buy a single Microsoft Surface, the NFL will agree to that. But they have to get rid of it, because then on a play like the false start play Sunday night or some of these other blatantly missed calls, all you should have is just a replay official buzzes into the official and says, hey, you guys missed something really obvious, call it. And then let's all move on with our lives so we don't have to get on this show and talk about the missed calls in various games.
All right.
And number four is Happy Hanukkah. It's Hanukkah.
Yeah, no, you were right. Hanukkah is early this year. I like that. It's fun.
It is.
That like adds to the holiday season. You get these holidays stacked on each other now. I'm with you. By the way, I used your home – folks listening, Gary Gramling sent me a Home Depot card out of the blue, basically, to me the other day as a gift.
You had a new house.
Wife. Well, yeah, but I wasn't expecting anything from you. I used it today. I went to Home Depot. We had snow in Boise. I got pet-friendly de-icer. I guess your pets
nice.
Can eat it is how
Wait,
I understand it.
Hang on, de-icer for, like, your car?
No, like sidewalks.
Oh, like the like salt?
Snow.
You don't just put down
salt?
But
it's not little... My dogs, when they walk on little salt, they look up at you like with this face that says, like, I'd rather be dead. What are you doing? And what you discover is the little salt gets in the cracks of their paws, and eventually they walk and just, like, their legs just break on. They don't walk anymore. You got to clean the salt out of their paws. So there's pet-friendly ice or salt, rather, that I guess makes it so they don't wish they're dead when they're out on walks, and I went and bought that with the gift card you gave me.
Well, that's really nice. That's a nice story. That's a nice holiday story, instead of complaining about stuff like we usually do. And I like that Hanukkah so early this year, because my mother's Jewish, my father's Catholic. We celebrate both of the holidays, and when they are stacked on top of each other, it is just the absolute worst thing that has ever happened to anyone, because then I have to go to, like, two places in 3 days or something like that. But it's awful. That's
I'm
it.
Happy for you.
That's it. That's our holiday bitterness at the end. That's a wrap for the show. Thanks to researchers Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor from Inga Sound Smart. Thank you to producer Shelby Royston and all the guys at Cadence 13 who make us sound good every week. But most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. You are the best. We'll be back for the Deep Dive Show on Thursday, and we'll have the mini mailbag. So send those questions talkback@themmqb.com. Or you can get us on Twitter, Andy_Bonite or GGrambling_SI. We are also on Facebook if you want to get us there. To get our shows, as well as the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer featuring Jenny Brentis and Connor Orr, plus the MMQB gambling podcast hosted by myself, Jimmy Trena, and Scott Grambling, just subscribe to the MMQB NFL podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Radio.com, and other podcast providers. We'll see you guys Thursday.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.